Welcome to Charlotte Mason's Volumes. I'm Min Huang. I am so pleased to be able to bring to you the wonderful words of wisdom of Miss Charlotte Mason. I have been a devotee and practitioner of Charlotte Mason's philosophy and methods from the very beginning of our homeschool, and it is no exaggeration that she has brought great delight to our home culture as well. I am now joined by my dear friend and sister, Amanda Coleman, and it is our hope that you will enjoy this labor of love.
Chapter 12, Some Instructors of Conscience, Poetry, Novels, Essays. Poetry. Poetry is perhaps the most searching and intimate of our teachers. To know about such a poet and his works may be interesting, as it is to know about reposé work, but in the latter case, we must know how to use the tools before we get joy and service out of the art. Poetry, too, supplies us with tools for the modeling of our lives, and the use of these we must get at for ourselves. The line that strikes us as we read, that recurs, that we murmur over at odd moments, this is the line that influences our living. If it speak only of old, unhappy, far-off things and battles long ago. A couplet such as this, though it appear to carry no moral weight, instructs our conscience more effectually than many wise saws. As we inwardly digest, reverence comes to us unawares, gentleness, a wistful tenderness towards the past, a sense of continuance, and of a part to play that shall not be loud and discordant, but of a piece with the whole. This is one of the lessons never learned in schools, which comes to each of us only as we discover it for ourselves. Many have a favorite poet for a year or two to be discarded for another and another. Some are happy enough to find the poet of their lifetime in Spenser, Wordsworth, Browning, for example. But whether it be for a year or a life, let us mark as we read, let us learn and inwardly digest. Note how good this last word is. What we digest, we assimilate, take into ourselves, so that it is part and parcel of us, and no longer separable. We probably read Shakespeare in the first place for his stories, afterwards for his characters, the multitude of delightful persons with whom he makes us so intimate that afterwards, in fiction or in fact, we say, she is another Jessica, and that dear girl is a Miranda. She is a Cordelia to her father, and such a figure in history, a base Iago. To become intimate with Shakespeare in this way is a great enrichment of mind and instruction of conscience. Then, by degrees, as we go on reading this world teacher, lines of insight and beauty take possession of us and unconsciously mold our judgments of men and things and of the great issues of life. Novels. Novels, again, are as homilies to the wise, but not if we read them merely for the tale. It is a base waste of time to read a novel that you can skip, or that you look at the last page of to see how it ends. One must read to learn the meaning of life, and we should know in the end who said what and on what occasion. The characters in the books we know become our mentors or our warnings, our instructors always. But not if we let our mind behave as a sieve, through which the whole slips like water. It would, of course, be a foolish waste of time to give this sort of careful reading to a novel that has neither literary nor moral worth, and therefore it is well to confine ourselves to the best, to novels that we can read over many times, each time with increased pleasure. The superficial way in which people read is illustrated by the fact that 99 out of 100 run away with the notion that Thackeray presents us with Amelia as an ideal woman, while few extract the solemn moral of the tale, that a man cannot give to a woman more than she is worth, and that Dobbin, the faithful Dobbin, found his life at last, not in Amelia, but in his books and his daughter. It is well that we should choose our authors with judgment, as we choose our friends, and then wait upon them respectfully to hear what they have to say to us. Essays. Of the ever-delightful essayists, I will not speak here. These, like the poets, we must find out for ourselves. They make a claim of special personal intimacy with their readers, and each apparently light phrase should give us pause. There may be more in it than meets the eye. Anyway, the essayist, to take him at his best, writes because he has something personal to say to you and me, because there is some fruit of the thought of his life he would have us taste. So, let us read for edification. Thank you for joining us here as we read through Charlotte Mason's volumes. This is our labor of love to you, and if you found this podcast to be helpful, we'd love if you could take a minute to leave us a 5-star review. Hope to see you here next time.